M13. Number 1B.
So, in between Joshua and Jesus, there is still a great development that has to be found out for ourselves. And one of the most important developments that has to be found out for ourselves. Because up to this point, we follow rather easily in metaphysics. Up to this point, we can follow somehow to see, yes, if there is what Moses said, one God who is what he is, the I am that I am, unchangeable God, the all God, unchangeable God, then his universe is unchangeable too, and therefore our true identity, our true nature, our true manhood, our true being is also everlasting, unchangeable. But seeing this, spiritually acknowledging this and demonstrating it, these are two different things. Only Jesus came and demonstrated it. So let's see that we don't try to jump that gap which is between Judges or Joshua. Let's first say Joshua and Jesus. What is that gap? Well, that gap is, let's first take Judges. You see, Judges comes, as we know, and thank God I don't find my notes. Peggy always says, if I only would lose my notes. In Judges, you see, they have reached the promised land, and yet they were constantly in danger of losing it. There always came in at that point that the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. Apparently they haven't found it or they wouldn't do evil. Then, because they did that, it always comes the story that they were delivered into the hands of the enemies. See, they hadn't yet found everlastingly their true identity. Could be still robbed from them, taken away from them. They were delivered into the hands of some enemies. Then they cried unto the Lord. They returned inwardly again to the Lord. They cried unto the Lord. Then the Lord would send them a redeemer, a judge, for a certain time. He would free them again of their enemies. Then we are happy again, then we are jolly again. And the next thing Judges says, that they did evil in the sight of the Lord and fell again into the hands of the enemies. Well, we don't like to do that again. See, why is it? And Judges says, I tell you why, because it says, because at that time there was no king in Israel. And each one did what is right in his own eye. I don't know if I quote it properly, but that's the sense of it. See? It was that point where they begin to feel that something is lacking, they don't have a king. And because they didn't have a king, but because they were good people, they did that which was right in their own eye. But to do right in one's own eye is not principle. That's what's right from one's own personal point of view. From one's own view of that which is divine and not divine. But one's own view of what is right, of what one, now, let me say something. One's own view, what is the first 1,000-year period, and the second 1,000-year period, and the third 1,000-year period, may not be principles. View of what the first 1,000 period, and the second 1,000-year period, and the third 1,000-year period is. And so they began to see that though they have progressed spiritually to a great great extent, they still didn't have an unchangeable principle from which they could interpret what is right in God's eye. If they still had, they did that which was right in their own eye, and that their own eye wasn't yet principle's eye was shown that they always fell again, that they always did evil again, in the sight of the Lord, in the sight of the Lord, not in their sight. You see, you come there at the edge, there where the 3,000-year period links over to the 4,000-year period. You really come to the crux of it, you see, where we have to see, well, mind, spirit, and soul, or the first, second, and 1,000-year period must be a principled understanding of mind, spirit, soul, and not our understanding of mind, spirit, and soul. That's what they began to see. See, up to that point in our lives, every student says, quite right, and we can't blame him, he says, but I know now what the first 1,000-year period is. I know now what the second 1,000 period is. I know now what the 3,000 period is. And because I know, I do what I know. And he thinks it's God. But it's what is right still at this point in his own eyes. It may be 20% right, it may be 99% right, but it isn't in any way not God's eye. So they did evil in the sight of God, of the Lord. And they felt we need a king. They always felt then we need a king. A king. Why a king? So we come to the 4,000-year period, to that kingdom period. But let's see what it means. It means that because they felt that they must have a principle which interprets mind, spirit, soul, and not their understanding of interpreting mind, spirit, soul, they were clamoring for a king. That's the first reaction. It was a true reaction, a good reaction, though translated down to the lowest level of human existence in that development. They thought, well, a king. See, now thought begins to see that there must be a center from which everything should be governed, a center from which everything should be looked at, a center which to look out on everything. And so the 4,000-year period starts with that completely new concept of God as Sabaoth. Say Sabaoth, Lord, the Lord of hosts. Sabaoth. Yes? You know what I mean? The Lord of hosts. The original name of Lord of hosts is Sabaoth. Good. Alright, I say the Lord of hosts, then we know. See, right at the beginning of Samuel, for the first time in the Bible, God is now called the Lord of hosts. See, the Lord of all the ideas. Now he becomes the center of a universe. Up to that point, it was either the God of Abraham, or the God of Jacob, or the God of Isaac, or it was Moses' definition, just as the I am that I am, without any interpretation of it. Now, thought goes further. Thought goes further and says, everything in the spiritual realm has to be interpreted, has to have a center from which to interpret its whole universe. Now comes the change, you see, from my understanding to where principle says, I alone have an understanding. I alone have an interpretation of what is divine and what is not divine. So, with the beginning of this kingdom period, see, we have now, after churches, we have the kingdom period over the books of Samuel and Kings, and then afterwards the prophetic age. With the beginning of the kingdom period, we come now to a quite new standpoint, which says, you can't hold with mind, spirit, and soul. If you hold with mind, spirit, and soul, you will see, you will spiritually understand that you have an identity, that identity is everlasting, but you will not be able to demonstrate it everlastingly. You will not be able to demonstrate it in every phase of your life. Why not? And so it is because there was no king, there was not yet awakened in one's consciousness the fact that we can only reason from principle, that we can only interpret right if we interpret from principle. In other words, the personal I, the personal sense of right and wrong, what is right in one's own eye, has to go, has to give place to a principled sense of things. Now, that's the story of Samuel. Right at the beginning of Samuel, we find Samuel's mother, Hannah. Say Hannah, yes. Hannah, how she prayed to have a man child. Really, a man child, a principled child. And how she could see that she could only have a man child, a principled child, if she would give it to God. So in her prayer, where she prayed to have a man child, she promised that Lord of hosts, she promised him to lend her child always to God, for all the life, to give it to God. She says, therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. Now we come to the crux of the whole week. See, from now on, let's be careful that we see what we are doing this whole week. The new standpoint, the new attitude of the 4,000 year period. Now you say, no more I will have that child for what I deem right in my own eye, and I really want to do the best of it. That's not enough. That's not enough. It goes further and says, now I like to have that child, I like to see science and the idea of science not for me, not to do with it what I deem right, but to lend it to the Lord, so that the Lord could say to Samuel that he should be his priest, and I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in mine heart and in my mind. That's what the Lord said. See, whereas in churches you had the other way around. Whereas in churches we were asking for something which we could use according to our heart and to our mind. And now the the switch comes with principle. The switch comes which says, now go first to principle. Give everything to principle. And only that which principle wants, to achieve, that is to be achieved. And so, right at that point, you see, we find that change where God now says, Samuel should be a faithful priest to me, a faithful, who will do what is in the Lord's mind and in the Lord's heart. It naturally means a complete surrender of our personal sense, of our personal wish, of our personal ambition, of our personal this and our personal that. And without this, we'll never reach the 5,000-year period of Jesus. We will always be just brought back to Babylon and to captivity, and never get out of it again. So here, right at the beginning, let's now see, I will take it very slowly how that thought developed, you see, to the 4,000-year period. It comes now to us that new thing which says, not what is right in your eye, but give the child to the Lord. Lend it to the Lord. It says, give my life, my ambition, that's not really a good term, give my life, that which I'm living here for, my purpose of living here for, give that to the Lord, so that the Lord can do what is in the Lord's heart and in the Lord's mind. And that's how Samuel ministered to the Lord. And every time, you see, when the people, they still didn't have a king at that moment, they had Samuel. Every time they were losing a battle, when they even lost the ark, and when they thought, now everything is hopeless, we don't have any more the Ark of the Covenant, then Samuel would come again always with the same advice. Always with the same advice. He would come and say, now, if we do return to the Lord with all your heart, see, it's returning to the Lord with your heart, then put away the strange gods from among you and prepare your heart unto the Lord and serve Him. Now you have to begin to serve Him. See, that's the big point. Up to this point of print of the 4,000-year period, up to this point, we were not taught that we have to serve the Lord, but we thought the Lord should serve us. Well, that's what, let's be very frank, that's what most religion expect. They turn to religion, to prayer, and to everything, so that the Lord will be good to them and serve them. So that if they have a desire, they go and say to the Lord Almighty, now look here, this is what I want, and this is what I feel right, and this is, I think, what should be done, and now get busy and do it, please. Isn't it with our lives? Yeah. Isn't it so that we have not yet said, perhaps none of us has yet said, here I am, use me. Isn't it so that we still say, well, at the moment I still have to do this and that and the other? You see, we haven't touched yet the 4,000-year period in our lives. Well, we can't generalize it. We do it here and we do it there. But we are not talking about the instance, we are talking about the principle behind it. I mean, so that we see where we are going. That's what the beginning of the kingdom period tells us, you see. And it says, well, lend it to the Lord, and let the Lord use you, let the Lord do with you what is in His eye, and in His mind, and in His heart. Need some guts to do it. But Samuel had it. Somehow we will get it. And I think the way we will get it is through the prophets. I think the trust we need for it we will get this week through the prophetic age. Now, let's go on. Having seen that, you see, then comes the counterfeiting of King Saul. Well, King Saul was made king. He was responding to that clamoring for a king, but he didn't quite see the office of that principled attitude. And because he couldn't quite see it, because he was personal, because he was always looking from the outward. For the Lord, it says, he rejected the word of the Lord. For the Lord sees not as man sees, he says to Saul. For the Lord sees not as man sees, for man looketh at the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh at the heart. See, at that period, we always have the heart coming in, right through the prophetic age, the heart, which is a symbol, naturally, for the principled understanding. So he could see that King Saul was not yet seeing the principled attitude, that he was not yet looking out from principle, that he was still looking what was right and big and good in his own eyes, and so he couldn't succeed. And then we get the true King David, who really did what was necessary at that period. He always let God do what needed to be done. It was when he was battling with Goliath, it was the Lord's battle. It wasn't his battle. He said it was the Lord's battle. See, he didn't strive as Jacob. He already began to let God strive for him. And in the battle with King Saul, he always gave everything to the Lord. It was the Lord avenges me of thee. He didn't say, I'm going to avenge you. I know what is right, I know what is wrong, and he jolly well knew what is right and what is wrong. But he thought, well, it may only be 20% right. I'm not going to kill Saul. I could kill him. I could get rid of him. It would be a good job to get rid of him. For whole Israel, it would be a good thing to get rid of Saul. He didn't. He said, I let God, the Lord, revenge me. He said, the Lord be judge between thee and me, and plead my case, and deliver me out of thine hand. So it's constantly showing that new attitude which David now got, that he began to see, well, there is a king. There is a divine king. The Lord is king. That's the true king he began to see. And if I let that principle work in principle's way, then it will come out 100% right. And not only 20% right, or 30% right, or 60% right, if I do it with my sense of right, with my sense of God. Then I let God's sense of God and good work unrestrictedly. So David's attitude was that attitude of letting God govern him, of attributing really to God, to that divine principle, to that unseen principle, govern him. And that enabled him to bring David really away from the sheep coat, and made him king. See, that wonderful range of showing how if we are willing to let God work out our identity, that then God is able to take us away from the sheep coat and make us king over the whole realm. And he proved it. And he proved it, and when the reason came up in Samuel, why was David able to prove it? The reason that was given was always because the Lord said to him, I was with thee whithersoever thou wentest. See, the reason was always that wonderful coincidence between principle and idea, where we say in our heart, because the Lord is always with us, we could do it. And not because I used principle so that principle could serve me, I could do it. Because the Lord was always with thee, you could do it. So it is always that standpoint where we can see that if we let principle work itself out in us, then principle is with us. Now, let's be quite clear, you see, that such a familiar verse and citation, which we always know, I was with thee, doesn't mean a spatial with you, a locality, that the Lord God is just right where I am. You see? Well, that's a very limited, it's a three-dimensional God, and not the infinite God. If he says the Lord was with me, he meant that the knowledge of principle and principles working was always with me. The religious sense says, well, because God is all, he's right where I am. Well, that's a very nice thing to say. I say that so often to patients when they are beginners. Just to say that the Lord Almighty is not up in heaven and in the clouds, he's right here where you are. But really, that's all right up to the 3,000-year period. But when you come to the 4,000-year period, you must give it quite a different interpretation to it. It's the interpretation that God is with you as principle, not as a locality, in a locality, but as a principled sense, because David, you see, David, when you remember the whole story of first and second book of Samuel, it's that wonderful illustration how a David was constantly relying on mind, spirit, soul. That was his principle. Whatever he did, you see, was relying on mind, spirit, soul as his principle, and that helped him. That's what means the Lord was with me. See? And now, the promise he got was that if David would do that, that if we would do that, that if we would take a principled attitude of mind, spirit, soul, then our kingdom would be an everlasting kingdom. Now we come to, again nearer, you see, to the sense that that kingdom will be everlastingly with us. That it will not be a kingdom which will come and go anymore. From that point on, they begin to say and prophesy of the everlasting kingdom, and that it will stay with us everlastingly and can no more be taken away. From here now we come to that problem. What spiritual step have we to take? What new spiritual standpoint have we to take so that which has been presented up to now will be everlastingly with us? I have to stop because of these recorders here.